While retired Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman has gained wide notoriety for exposing President Trump's misconduct and for testimony in Congress that resulted in the president's first impeachment, Vindman is regarded professionally as a leading policymaker and the preeminent national security strategist on Russia and Ukraine. His latest work is the new book, The Folly of Realism, How the West Deceived Itself About Russia and Betrayed Ukraine. It is a great pleasure to welcome Lieutenant Colonel Vindman to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. Looking forward to the conversation.
So let me start with this, which is far from a brilliant question, but I don't know what else to say other than, did even you, as you were writing this, think that we would be in the position we are in when the book came out?
For most of it, no. Actually, this was a doctoral dissertation that I finished in December of 22. So well before the events of the election or anything else. But there was the epilogue I did write in the days after the election. The way that this all unfolded is finished the dissertation, wanted it to be part of a conversation about all the mistakes we've been doing with regards to Russia policy throughout the years, Republican, Democratic administration, and wanted it to not be just something that was discussed in academic circles or policy circles, but by the general audience. So written through in 23 and 24, and then just the epilogue, which is, you know, paints a pretty dark picture of how we went from mistakes to, you know, outright folly now with an about face, a turn towards Russia. So I couldn't expect, you know, this kind of outcome, no.
What do you think is there a rational reason for it other than the obvious of what it is at stake here of going against decades and decades of foreign policy? And while you can go through the campaign and talk about America first, that by then turning and saying that Ukraine was the aggressor in the war, I mean, those are very, very far apart.
It is. There is some level of consistency. I look at the U.S.-Russia-Ukraine relationship since 1991. We've consistently had a Russia first policy. We've consistently catered to poor instincts about hopes about what we could accomplish with Russia, fears what would happen if we challenged Russia. We both misunderstood Russia and also underserved our own interests in supporting democracies in the region, including Ukraine, hardening them against Russian aggression. So you could see this, you know, this consistent vein. But where we end up now is really what I think now is like the poison Kool-Aid phase of the mistakes. It is the most extreme scenario in which we put Russia first. And we do it in such a way where it really does harm U.S. interests. It undermines our relationships with our allies in Europe. It emboldens Russia and emboldens other adversaries. It really doesn't do anything to put America first. Yes, there's a continuity, but now we're in the most extreme phase of this.
One of the things that struck me as the president made his initial remarks is, and I don't know whether you agree with this or not, but it certainly seems to be playing out this way, that's not something you can walk back, right? I mean, that's not something that you can say, and if you make a policy proclamation and say, oh, what we really meant was, I mean, when you say that the Ukraine is the aggressor and that is, it's hard to then turn around to both, Secretary Rubio is finding out, to bring that message forward and also to try to calm fears at the same time.
Yeah, it's, you know, the subtitle is How the U.S. Deceived Itself About Russia and Betrayed Ukraine.
Right.
We're seeing that play out. That declaration about Ukraine being a bad guy, really in the most kind of amplified in the biggest way with the UN vote in which we sided with Russia against Ukraine, against our allies. you're right. That is not something that is a turning point in U.S. relations. And to me, if you look at it in some sort of historical context, we wanted Russia and Ukraine, especially in the 90s at the collapse of the Soviet Union, we wanted them to both join the Community of Nations. At some point, it became clear by the time you get to Putin in the 2000s, that wasn't going to happen. And we could have continued to sustain that relationship with Ukraine, make Ukraine stronger. But the trend lines was maintain relationship with Ukraine as the good actor, Russia increasingly a bad actor, condemning him. Then set aside, you know, decades of policy without any justification, without any substantiation, is completely illogical. It makes no sense if you want to be the peacemaker, right? He wants to try to bring about the end of this war, fully catering to Russia that is completely uncompromising in the most maximalist kind of way, that wants capitulation, wants to completely subdue Ukraine. How does that advance the efforts of peace? Certainly putting pressure on Ukraine that is maximally willing to compromise, do whatever it takes to keep the U.S. on sides as an important ally. Putting further pressure on Ukraine also doesn't make sense. You're cutting your relationship with the country that's willing to listen. You're cutting your relationships with the European alliance, and you're strengthening the hand of the uncompromising party. That is the worst kind of deal to try to work your way out of.
One of the things that I thought was fascinating in the book is you talk about the of what it means for the authoritarian leaders of smaller states, of the impact that this policy has on them, where they may be somewhat dissuaded. However, it can also turn out to be a huge miscalculation.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said about the U.S. being just a superpower and being able to flex its muscles. We do that with adversaries and with friends. Usually it's with enticements and encouragement and, you know, partnership with friends. With Trump, it's more like extortion and coercion. With adversaries, we could threaten economic sanctions. In the worst case scenario, war, we might be able to get them to bend to our will. Although that has also kind of flopped, if you think about the past 20 years of war. We had 20 years in Afghanistan, a small country, tiny economy, couldn't get our way. We've been, you know, fending off aggressive Iran for decades. Still a small country. If we're you know, haphazard and inconsistent with the smaller countries, we don't have any tools really to apply against larger countries like Russia and China that can't be bullied in the same way, that have the staying power to either, in the case of China, to retaliate with tariffs when we slap tariffs on them, or for Russia to weather those economic sanctions. So this approach is just, it doesn't get us what we want. It doesn't get us, you know, stronger allies, weaker adversaries. It does the exact opposite. This realist transactional approach, constantly looking at what's in front of us, immediately in front of us, and looking to reduce risks immediately in front of us, instead of thinking about the big picture. This is the whole idea about neo-idealism. What is it that we really need to do? We need to strengthen our alliances. We need to develop democracies that are our source of stability and economic prosperity. That's where we need to go. But we've been doing the exact opposite. And again, with the Trump administration, it's the worst, most extreme play at this kind of a relationship.
It seems incredible to think that U.S. would side with Russia in a U.N. resolution on the invasion of Ukraine, especially a vote that's being taken on the third anniversary of the war. Again, that's hard to walk back, and it's sending a signal. And I don't know what, even as there are more and more negotiations regarding minerals and so forth, of how a resolution comes out of the chaos that is put before the world.
So, I mean, there are a couple of scenarios and, you know, varying degrees of probability. I'd say the lowest probability is that somehow this chaotic approach from the Trump administration, completely kind of, you know, appeasing Russia and flattery of Putin, somehow convinces Putin that he could get what he wants with Putin, with Trump, either now or 3 years from now. And this might be a time to kind of take a pause, you know, end hostilities temporarily, lick his wounds, rebuild, and then strike back out later. That is a remote scenario. The Russians don't really have any respect for Trump. They want to subdue Ukraine. They don't want to give Ukraine any time to rebuild itself. That seems like a remote possibility that this approach to pander to Putin makes would work. The alternative is that Putin does continue to dangle the possibility of a peace in front of Trump for some time, for some months. There are some discussions about easing the sanctions. Ukraine doesn't get any support. But down the road, 4, 5, 6 months, Trump is like, throws his hands in the air. I try to work with this guy, Putin, doesn't work. Ukrainians are willing to bend over backwards. We have this rare earths deal. We could get access to their commodities. We pivot back towards a relationship that makes more sense, that's in line with our allies, that's in line with Ukraine. And the reason that we do this is, you know, partially because Trump doesn't get his win, but also because folks like Rubio and Waltz say, Mr. President, you try to work with Russia, it didn't work. Now it's time to, the only way you could get a win is by, you know, making some reason out of your approach. So we end up in a better place. But there are alternative scenarios that are disturbing. One is in that time frame, the Europeans have to step in a bigger way, and maybe they put troops on the ground. Russia tests the resolve of the Europeans, and we have a bigger war, a spillover in which the Russians start to engage in hybrid warfare, or this thing blows up. It's a entirely illogical approach that the Trump administration is taking, that they will have to dig their way out of. And I think a lot of lives are going to be lost in Ukraine. The danger for U.S. troops becomes higher. The Trump administration doesn't get it gets embarrassed into changing its approach, which happens, frankly, quite often with Trump. He reverses courses pretty regularly. The joke is that, you know, the last person that talks to him gets their way. It's just a lot of things broken, a lot of broken glass, not easily recovered from.
Alexander Vindman is our guest. The name of the book is The Folly of Realism, How the West Deceived Itself About Russia and Betrayed Ukraine. You talk about that last person in the room scenario, which may be one of the reasons that as of our conversation, being our conversation that we're taping on Wednesday afternoon, that President Zelensky is looking to meet with Trump as early as Friday. And to be a person that will be there and to lock something in before there is a U.S.-Russian summit, is how realistic do you think that is of something positive to come out of that conversation if it's to take place?
I have my doubts, but it's a concerted effort between Zelensky, Starmer, the Prime Minister of the U.K., Emmanuel Macron, that are doing the rounds. I think we'll see other foreign leaders cycle through to try to get the ear of Trump and provide him some sort of counsel. The problem is, to a certain extent, they have major, major headwinds. Trump has a strong affinity for Putin and a strong antipathy for Ukraine. He has something in his mind. And when he gets something in his mind, he's trying to change history right now around the 2020 election still, or the January 6th insurrection. Trying to get Trump to change his mind is a feat. But I think, these folks are making a concerted push to do that. This rare earths deal is an effort to put something bright and shiny in front of Trump, something that he could take and showcase as a win where the U.S., you know, has some economic benefits. I think that and the intransigence of the Russians that will merely dangle the prospect of peace but not really advance on it, that is where the opening is, the reality, the kind of the facts on the ground leave some hope that we might be able to navigate our way out of it, even though thus far we've mishandled this whole effort to achieve peace. To me, the long-term prospects of the U.S. role in the world, they're troubling. The next 4 years, we're going to damage a lot of our historical relationships. We're going to try to curry favor with authoritarian regimes. We're not going to get very far with them. So the next administration that comes in is really going to have to figure out a way to recapture moral leadership. And that's one of the things I try to spend some time talking about. You know, we need to understand that central to U.S. interests are our values, our democratic alliances that give us security and give us economic prosperity, and that we need to invest in these things. That's one of the things I try to point to as a way out of this dark moment that we find ourselves in. That's both this administration at its worst, but really 3 decades of mishandling our relationships with Russia and authoritarian regimes.
So you believe that in the future of, I mean, there's a lot of ifs here, but that the U.S. will have an opportunity to recapture an alliance?
I think so. If you think about this in the historical cycles, we are now seeing the extreme pendulum swing towards, you know, this transactional realism. There's going to have to be a course correction. Another administration is going to come in, either a more kind of normal Republican administration. Look, there is a lot of ifs, just to be clear. Yeah. Or a Democratic administration. And they're going to look for a way to rebuild bridges. Biden did that at the after 2020. He was successful. Now we're going to break more, but the next administration is going to come in and look for a way to recapture moral leadership. That's going to be through shared values, shared interests, and the shared understanding of the threats that we and our allies face. And I guess I'm pointing towards a way to do this in the long term. In the short term, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be back to the basics. How do you see if you could achieve a win-win situation where Zelensky's delivering on this rare earth deal, but it also buys him some additional U.S. support and some security. So there's a way to manage it, but long term, we need to return back to some sort of understanding that values are central.
I do, before you leave, I do want to ask a question in regards to, obviously, you are retired as a U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel. And just what you make of what is happening within the Joint Chiefs, what's happening within the Defense Department, how those departments are shaping up, and what the new mantra is within that, and what signs we see as a result of who is being chosen to take over these huge jobs.
So Trump is and his henchmen are looking for absolute loyalty. They don't want anybody that will question any of the directions or dictates that they issue going forward. And I think some of these leaders were understood to be, you know, have sworn an oath to support and defend the Constitution, that we're not going to blindly obey illegal orders. So he's going to start to chip away at different departments and agencies to eliminate folks that he could see as impediments to whatever he wants to do. One of the most dangerous things that he did with regards to the Department of Defense is get rid of the legal counsels. These 3-star generals, they're called the TJAGs. These are the folks that interpret the law to make sure that military commanders are acting in accordance with the law. And replacing them is an effort to ensure that any issue orders that come through Hegseth or the president are interpreted as legal. That's supposed to be a means to, if the president chooses to issue instructions about martial law, to get the military to maybe commit force violence against the citizenry. We're a long ways away from that, just to be clear. I want to put folks' mind at ease. The military is a values-driven institution. This is not just the top 4 stars. This is all the way down to the troops, the second lieutenants. They get trained to obey lawful orders and disobey illegal orders. So, you know, using force against the civilian population is not going to come naturally. It's going to take a lot of breaking in order to get to that point. But it's an effort to get there. It's an effort to, you know, undo our democracy, our guardrails. And it's another dangerous step amongst the many that have been unfolding over the course of the past month.
Alexander Vindman is the author of the new book, The Folly of Realism, How the West Deceived Itself About Russia and Betrayed Ukraine. It is published by Public Affairs. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. A great pleasure to have you on the program and to share your expertise. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, The Folly of Realism. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.